Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I'd like to welcome all of you back to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder. Tonight, we're going to be talking about Contact 260, and there's a lot of fascinating stuff in there as well. As I wanted to read just a little bit from Billy's book, The Might of Thoughts. Carrying out a developmental change of one's own inner nature to that which is new and progressive is neither easy nor quick in effect. In fact, the human being's own imagination of him or herself is very often limited in a quite rigid and wrong kind. Often it is the case that he or she suggests a wrong idea to himself / herself and pursues this stiffly and inflexibly. The power of auto-suggestion is thereby nothing other than the power of self-hypnosis, which comes about by means of the power of one's own thoughts, and thereby indeed by means of the might of the thoughts, whereby, as a rule, a belief is behind it, from which the significant thoughts are created. According to whether the thoughts are negative or positive, they then naturally have an effect and cause the belief to take effect. Thus, if the human being accepts an idea, regardless of whether it is negative or positive, and pursues it with his or her belief, or consciously, evolutively, or even pathologically, automatically, unconsciously, then this has a self-suggestive and self-hypnotic effect. Well, this book is quite interesting, The Mind of Thoughts. I've been going through it. I'm in my third trip through this book, trying to really wrap my mind around the incredible content that is here. Just to sum up a very few important ideas that I think that are talked about in this book. First of all, you are the master of your own life. Your thoughts are incredibly powerful. And good thoughts are thoughts which are neutral positive in nature. That means they're not too positive and not too negative. Just kind of a balance there, a neutral positive way of looking at life. And if you have neutral positive thoughts, then eventually you'll have good feelings. And good feelings respond to thoughts. Now, emotions are not feelings. Emotions erupt suddenly. Feelings are something that grow based on your thoughts, and you should cultivate good thoughts because they lead to good feelings. And good feelings lead to good habits in your life, and good habits in your life lead to a successful life. It leads to good circumstances in your life. Now, every human being must make the effort to clarify his or her thoughts. And that means you need to repeat them if necessary. Repeat your own thoughts out loud. Put an effort in this. Practice this. To clarify means to make things clear and easier to understand. You need to learn to remove the confusion from your own thoughts. Confusion means a lack of understanding, uncertainty. So we need to clarify our own thoughts because they will become more valuable if they're clarified, and your life will become more harmonious in an equalized way. So this requires patience and practice because your consciousness is like a garden, and you need to nurture the part of your consciousness which is healthy for you. You need to nurture the good thoughts. You need to nurture healthy thoughts. You need to think in healthy ways. You need to focus on your consciousness, because the evolution of your consciousness is really the meaning of life. The purpose of our life is the evolution of our consciousness. Now, we all have a spirit form, and the spirit form is a little You could think of it as no bigger than the head of a pin. It resides in an area of your middle brain called the superior colliculus. That's the area that controls sight and seeing. And that spirit form you could think of as kind of a fragment of something called the universal consciousness. The universal consciousness, the Meyer information also calls the creation. Now, creation is, you could think of as our universe in a sense. And there are seven concentric belts or rings in the structure of our universe. There's the central core, and then there's the belt that surrounds that is called the Ur-core belt. And then the third belt is called the Ur-space belt. And the fourth belt is the solid state matter universe belt, where matter exists, the planets, the suns, the galaxies, the meteors, the comets, the gases, the dark matter, everything that's physical. And then the fifth belt is a transformation belt. The sixth belt is a creation belt. It's called the creation matter belt or expansion belt. The seventh belt is the displacement belt. Now, our universe was created 46 trillion years ago in something that we almost can refer to as a Big Bang. It's not exactly a bang, but similar. And another universe was also created. There's a parallel universe to ours called the Tao universe. And that universe was created instantly in the same way. So we have these two parallel universes that are residing right next to each other. They're both 46 trillion years old, much more ancient than our scientists think. And the Meyer material tells us that just in our galaxy, there are 587 billion suns and planets. There are about 7 million solar systems which can support higher life like human beings. And according to Meyer information, there are 2,630,000 human civilizations in our galaxy. Now, to complicate this whole matter even more, is there are different space-time configurations in our universe. So some of these human races are in time-space configurations, time-space planes, dimensions, if you will, that are not on the same time plane as us. They're not. It's not the same space-time configuration as we are. But nonetheless, these people exist because every spirit form will incarnate as a human being and will live a material life. The purpose of our life is to gather wisdom, and we do that through many millions of lifetimes, and then eventually we merge back with this super intelligence which runs our whole universe, called the creation. That's just kind of the big picture. I like to go back over that big picture on somewhat of a regular basis. Now, in the specific contact that we're talking about is contact 260. Billy has had over close to 600 of these contacts now. He started about 1945 when he was a young boy, and initially it was a man named Svath, and then a woman named Asket, and then another woman named Semyase. And the last section of Billy's life here, now he's in his late 70s, he's been talking mostly to two extraterrestrial human men, one named Ta and the other named Quetzal. And in 260 here, we're in the middle of a discussion between Ta and Quetzal. And it refers back to an earlier discussion that Billy had with Semyase. And if you're new to this show, you don't know who all these people are, you'll eventually catch up. I wanted to read something that one of these extraterrestrials was telling Billy about Adolf Hitler. Adolf Hitler, in many respects, was a genius. His knowledge ranged from a variety of areas of art and technology, considering a variety of sciences. Hitler was also very good at the power of suggestion. he was a person that was really going to have a positive impact on the world. However, he went off on the wrong path, which was not entirely his fault. In fact, he would have helped to create a peaceful, united world if it were not for the meddling of a group called the Giza Intelligences. And the Giza Intelligences were an extraterrestrial group, extraterrestrial humans that had been residing below the Giza Plateau in Egypt. They were forced out around the mid-1970s. They're not there anymore, but from the time of the end of Atlantis and Lemuria to about 1975, according to this information, the Giza Intelligences were manipulating mankind for their own purposes. They wanted to create a one-world religion, so to speak, and they wanted to be on top of this religion. And they were going to use religion to control the people of the earth. They also had contacts with Adolf Hitler through the Thule Society. And they disrupted Adolf Hitler's natural destiny in what he would have done. Let me read again here. The Giza Intelligences succeeded in taking possession of Adolf Hitler's being and misusing him for their dark and malicious purposes. Without him being able to defend himself against them, for a delusion-related lust for power flared up inside him. And that becomes real obvious if you study Hitler at all. He was winning the war in World War II very clearly, and there was absolutely no reason for him to go into Russia. They were his allies. But that's where this delusion-related lust for power flared up. He became and started to lust for world domination. Now, there was a man back before Hitler even came to power who was named Hermann Steinschneider, who belonged to the Thule Society and was the primary person that really set Hitler off on the wrong path. Let me read what Ta says to Billy here. The reason for his wrongly chosen path developed quite clearly on when he secretly came in contact with the Thule Society of that time, in consequence of which he also came into contact with Hermann Steinschneider, who also belonged to the Thule Society and supported its unfair goals, and who called himself the clairvoyant Eric John Hannesson. So the man's real name was Hermann Steinschneider. He called himself Eric Hannesson. And this Steinschneider moved in all the circles of the major Nazi figures and eventually came into contact with Adolf Hitler. So this Thule Society, this Thule Society, worked with the Giza Intelligences and eventually influenced Hitler to a great degree. Now, Steinschneider was murdered around 1933, but this didn't change Hitler's attitude and course. By that time, Hitler became more and more of a monster, as you'd probably say. So anyway, you get some very interesting insights into history from the Meyer information. And evidently Adolf Hitler would have been a very positive person if he had not been set off track by these Giza Intelligences. Who are the Giza Intelligences? Well, as I've talked a little bit before about them, there was a very bloodthirsty set of rulers that can be traced all the way back to Eris the Barbarian, who was a king of wisdom, who came to the earth with 200 leaders and sub-leaders back in ancient times. He conquered Hyperborea, which is the area to the north, which was actually very beautiful at that time. I think the earth had a firmament, like an envelope, like a cloud envelope Don't quote me on that, but there was our climate was very different. In the north, this Hyperborea was a very beautiful area. Lowest temperature, 70 degrees. Orange trees, apple trees, palm trees. A place of eternal summer. And Aris the Barbarian, hundreds of thousands of years ago, came here with his 200 leaders and sub-leaders, and they stirred up a great war between Atlantis and Lemuria. But before they did that, they conquered Hyperborea, and Aris the Second, Aris's son, conquered India and Pakistan. And eventually, as I've talked about before, this great war started, which wiped out both Atlantis and Lemuria, which ended when the Lemurians brought a great asteroid back into the Earth, slammed it into the Earth, which caused a pole shift, which upset our ecosystem and caused this huge catastrophe on the Earth and devastated most of the life on Earth. The extraterrestrial humans that were here, most of them that didn't escape were killed, and the ones that remained and survived went back to the harshest forms of living. They lost their technology, they lost their history, and then down through the generations, as centuries went by, and people were just trying to survive from moment to moment on what they could scrounge up. The great knowledge of Atlantis and Lemuria was lost, and Earth slowly recovered, and a man came to the Earth from the stars named Aris the 11th, the great descendant of Aris the Barbarian. And he was the leader that eventually started the line of the Giza intelligences, which went something like Aris the 11th, and then Jehave, and then Jehovan, and then Arisame, who went underground, and he occupied these old cubicle constructions, which were some 73,000 years old. And then Aris was pushed out of power by a man named Hen, who was his nephew. Hen was also known as Jehovah or Yahovah. His actions are talked about in great detail in the Old Testament. And one of the things that Yahovah did was destroy Sodom and Gomorrah. Eventually, he was pushed out of power by Comegal the First, and Comegal the First was pushed out of power by Comegal the Second. Now we're all the way back to about 1975. The Giza intelligences eventually are pushed off the earth by the Pleiaren. Now, who are these extraterrestrials that Billy has had contact with? Most of the Earth knows them as the Pleiadians. They're not from our Pleiades. They're from some 80 light years beyond our Pleiades. Our Pleiades that we see in the sky consist of young blue suns that don't support life. But the Native Americans, who knew about these extraterrestrials, always called them the Pleiadians, and that name kind of stuck for many years. And for many years, they had bases on the Earth. Up until about 1995, they had bases in Asia, North America, and one in Switzerland that had been here for 300 years. I think about that time, there was something like 2,800 of these extraterrestrial humans from the Pleiaren star system, from Lyra Vega, and from nearby stars. They left. And they shut all these bases down, but they wouldn't tell us why. We still don't know what the whole reason is. One group of extraterrestrials that were here lived in Mount Shasta, and they were the remnants of the Hyperboreans, and they had been on Earth for hundreds of thousands of years. They were blonde people. They pretty much kept to themselves. Occasionally, you'd see one of their spacecraft come out of the eastern side of Mount Shasta, and it would be kind of a golden orb shape, and people get pictures of these things, and pretty amazing. sometimes when human beings get too close to their underground base there, they're stunned with these kind of beam weapons. But mostly the Hyperboreans kept to themselves. I don't know that they're still there. Maybe in 1995 they left as well. There was another extraterrestrial group that was here on the Earth in the North Sea. They had an underground base, or excuse me, a base that was in the, I think in the North Atlantic. And I'm trying to remember the name of that group, and it's just escaped me. But we'll come back to that. Oh, the Hasters. Yeah, the Hasters. And they weren't, as far as their development, they were not that far ahead of us, you know, maybe 1,000 years. They were brought here, actually. They don't have the technology to get here. The Hasters don't have the technology to get here. The galaxy they live in is incredible distance away, like 483 million light years. They were brought here by the Pleiaren. And the Hasters were here studying us as well. Now, one of the things that you have to keep in mind about these contacts is that one of the reasons that Billy has had so many contacts is because of, well, for lack of a better word, let's say his vibration. His spirit form is very ancient. And it gives off emanations. We all kind of give off signals. And his vibrations, I don't like that word, but his vibrations are more compatible than ours. Most of these extraterrestrials cannot stand to be around an Earth human unless they have some kind of protective device. So these Hasters built a station in the depths of the North Sea. And they had expeditionary work across the whole world. However, their mental and physical consciousness-related development had not progressed nearly as far as the Pleiaren. And the Pleiaren actually had to use vibration-neutralizing devices to interact with the Hasters, just as they have to do so also with the people of the Earth. However, the Hasters could move freely among the Earth people for a brief amount of time because our vibrations are a little more bearable to them. They can't be in our company more than about 17 hours or they will lose control of themselves. Now, haven't you ever been around someone that the longer you're around them, the more you can't stand being around them? Well, that's usually because of a difference. Well, probably many reasons, but sometimes it's a difference in evolution. And their thought forms are very, very different than yours. So that's, if you ever get that experience, that's where that can come. Now, I talked a little about Atlantis and the rise of Atlantis and Lemuria, but with the Meyer material, it traces back civilizations who came here before Atlantis and Lemuria, one of which was a man named Pelagon, who about 150,000 years ago brought people, I think, from the Barnard Star. They came here and they set up a great society on Earth that lasted thousands of years. I think it lasted 10,000 years until after Pelagon died. The man who came after him was not such a good leader. And eventually there was a horrible war. And the Earth again was left in a devastated state. The extraterrestrials who were here left and settled on other worlds. And I think it wasn't until about 7,000 years that people came back to the Earth from the stars. So we have a very, maybe it was 700 years, before people came back. And they did come back, and that's where Atlantis and Lemuria got started. So we have a very different history. But we have the evidence. We just don't recognize it. The Great Pyramid and that whole pyramid system in Egypt is not all of these pyramids. The Great Pyramid is about 73,000 years old. Our scientists don't know that yet. Perhaps eventually, soon enough, we will know that. The extraterrestrials that were here were human beings, very much higher advanced than us. And generally speaking, they were benevolent. Not all of them. Some of them were bloodthirsty. And most of the bloodthirsty ones came to power. Now, the Meyer information has some ideas that are very different than most of the ideas that we have in our religions. The Meyer information explains that the universal consciousness is a spiritual energy. A spiritual energy that it refers to as a Wesenheiten in the German, which means that it means a lot of things. It means that it doesn't have a personality like a human being. It doesn't really have a personality. It's a super intelligence. It radiates love through its creations. The visible expression, the incredible splendor of nature, is the visible expression of the love of creation. So all the beautiful animals, all the beautiful landscapes on the earth are an example of the expression of love of this intelligence. Now, this intelligence is all about evolution. It doesn't love the way you and I do. It, like a star radiates light, it loves. It's kind of its nature. But it doesn't have any personality. It's not a, see, what we did in the ancient past here on the earth, and we were actually led down the wrong path, is we took this universal consciousness and we affixed to this a personality. And we said, oh, this is a god, and it becomes angry, and it's jealous sometimes, and it claims vengeance for itself. Now, these are all the confusions of religion. These are not the accurate state of the universe. See, what we have to wake up to on the earth is our own personal responsibility. We are responsible for our own evolution. We are responsible for success or failure. Now, our religions kind of form a crutch, so to speak. But what we have to learn to do here on the earth is learn to control our thoughts. One of the things that plagues us as human beings is the rotation of negative repeating thoughts. Our capacity for perception is impaired through negative and wrong thoughts. And in a certain respect, a delusional state can come forth through wrong, negative thoughts. Every human being can therefore fall prey to insanity if these repeating negative thoughts continue. Our own negative repeating thoughts are the cause for our suffering most of the time. Our own mental confusion, our own mental disorder brings about our own it increases our suffering. But we are actually the Lord and the Master of our own life. And every human being who starts to practice self-cognition and takes up self-examinations lets the appropriate self-control grow. That which the human being thinks he makes real. Let's repeat that. That which the human being thinks he makes real. Good and positive thoughts must be tended and nurtured. And the human being should have a good, positive opinion of him or herself. If someone becomes a criminal, a felon, if they become angry, a hater, that's caused by thoughts in your own consciousness. So we need to nurture and feed and protect our own thoughts. You know, we think in the womb. You know, a human fetus literally is thinking in the womb. When that spirit form comes into the brain of a child at 21 days, thought begins in that brain. And according to the Might of Thoughts book, thoughts pertaining to profound learning start to take place in the forming of a personality, as well as the forming of morality in the psyche, are occurring in the developing human being in the womb. We actually, through our own thoughts, attract similar kinds of people to ourselves. Correct thinking and knowledge is such a monstrous power that it's able to ceaselessly attract and bring into being everything that the human being longs for. So, you are the master of your own destiny. It's your innermost being that controls your own destiny. If you think a thought and you choose to steer that thought, you will steer yourself into inner freedom and good circumstances in your life. If you don't steer your own thoughts, you can fall into really bad traps like addictions. I wanted to talk quickly about something here. Let me ask a question. What must the human being do in order to give enough consideration to your own consciousness-based evolution? That's what we're here for, to evolve our consciousness. So what does the Meyer information say? How can we evolve our consciousness? This is an important question. One, we must create our own free will that's not influenced by religion. Two, we must defeat our passions and vices. That's a hard thing sometimes. Three, this section that I'm going to describe, it analyzes thought processes. Perception leads to cognition. Cognition leads to knowledge. Knowledge leads to experience. Experience becomes the essence of wisdom. And we eventually then evolve our consciousness. And we start to understand our responsibility. Now, here's a strange thought. We think with our unconscious mind. And wisdom comes first through the unconscious and then to the conscious mind. First we have an unconscious wisdom, unconscious thoughts, and then conscious thoughts. Usually the unconscious is about 25 to 30 hundredths of a second before the conscious mind completely understands something. So there's this interesting interplay between the conscious and the unconscious mind. And that's another thing you have to keep in mind is some of our problems are because of unconscious things. We have thoughts, which are unconscious. They spring up. And that's the way people become addicted to various things, whether it's something as silly as video games or it's a serious drug addiction. Page 42 of the Mind of Thought says, his or her wrong thinking, wrong wishes, hopes, and actions attract ever-worsening circumstances. So you have to think about what wishes you have, what your hopes are, what your thinking is. If you become addicted to something, then your thoughts will be directed toward the fulfillment of this vice. In fact, our entire thinking can become imprisoned by an addiction, and our whole life rotates around this addiction. It could be a silly addiction. It could be just being addicted to coffee. It could be something serious, like addicted to heroin. Anyway, the human being generally and many times thinks unconsciously. And because of that, many times we are the unconscious cause of the circumstances in our own life. And the unconscious is the part of the mind that's inaccessible, but it affects our behavior, it affects our emotions. The unconscious mind consists of processes in the mind that occur automatically, certain thoughts. So our unconscious has the ability to actually cause circumstances in our lives. And you can kind of, you can sense those wrong thoughts when they bubble up from the unconscious. Semyase told Billy that every human has within them a spirit that does not sleep, a spirit that will tell you if your thinking is right or wrong if you've learned to pay attention to it. It records all of our impulsations, our thoughts, and it's the bearer of the creative realm. So your spirit form, which lasts through your death cycle, through your life cycle, through your next death cycle, through your next life cycle, it's evolving through each lifetime. And when it comes into the fetus, it brings with it the consciousness. And the consciousness includes the subconscious, the unconscious, and the conscious mind. In your subconscious are stored all the wisdom of your predecessor personalities, which will influence you, which will inspire you. And then you have impulses that come in from the universal storage banks, from the planetary storage banks. But the key is being able to feel these. If you're addicted to something, you will not be able to get these impulses because all your thoughts are wrapped up around your addiction. If you're just lost in Nana Land and entertainment, you will not be sensitive and aware of these impulses. And unfortunately, that's the state of most of the world today. One's own thoughts can be controlled and maintained along the right path so that at least inner freedom and harmony can be obtained. There was an interesting interview that Billy did in 1988 where he talked a little bit about self-control. And he said that self-control one possesses must be self-evident and can only be gained through arduous self-scrutiny, which is difficult. Every iota of one's thoughts must be kept completely safe and under control. That's a real challenge. And in the Might of Thoughts book, in page 74, it says, unconscious processes of perception run their course through which the psyche is likewise influenced and directed. One of the most bizarre examples of unconscious, the power of the unconscious mind, are in these stigmata examples, where these people, through their own unconscious thoughts, bring up wounds on their bodies, on their hands, and on their feet. This is part of the power of these unconscious thoughts. Our unconscious thoughts and feelings can actually determine if we become healthy or sick. The reason that psychically disturbed human beings of all kinds only see black and black and therefore negatively is that their perceptual ability is very limited, whereby the world of thoughts also is inevitably falls prey to a limitation. So our thoughts are only able to move in this narrow framework, and indeed this is limited negative framework, and our thoughts are forced into a cycle which the same thoughts and themes of thoughts appear again and again and rotate. And those kinds of thoughts take away your inner freedom. That's why people have nervous breakdowns. That's why people sometimes go postal and do things that they otherwise would not want to do. It's because of these rotating, repeating negative thoughts. And this has nothing to do with evil spirits. Nothing to do with demons. That is your own thought processes that you can control. Emotion. What is emotion? Anger and rage. Those are big problems. Anger and rage. Due to ununderstanding, popularly, anger and rage are often put on the same level as each other. However, it thereby concerns two different factors. By definition, anger is a violent, uncontained outburst leading right up to fury. So, rage is defined as something a little worse than anger, because rage is often the violent, uncontrolled aspect of anger. And Marianne Ullinger Mondrian in Switzerland, if you don't understand, know who she is, she works right alongside Billy, has written an article about how anger harms the liver. The trigger for our anger is within ourselves. The degenerative negative frequencies which send out and come out from our mental block when we are angrily shouting are toxic for our own cells. Toxic for our liver cells, that they actually can degenerate and cancer cells can come from our own anger. People that are angry are often called intransigence, meaning refusing to compromise. Inflexibility is often associated with anger. We want to prevent anger. That means neither swallowing it nor letting it burst forth. Emotions are reactions. Emotions are unable to create thoughts. Now, feelings occur because of thoughts. Emotions arise spontaneously and are hard to bring under control by thoughts. Perfect example, laughing or crying. That's emotional. Emotions arise so quickly, and that's the unconscious aspect of that we can't often detect them. We cannot steer our emotions. We can steer our thoughts, we can steer our feelings, but we cannot steer our emotions. There are still many other effects which have important significance in our unconscious cognitive processing. Here are some things that can affect our unconscious mind. Alcoholism, our desires, our gender, our state of our health, the firmness of our psyche and consciousness, the fitness of our body. So we have unconscious subliminal perceptions in every human being. Let me explain what one of the extraterrestrials told Billy about unconscious perceptions. This was Asket. She said, thereby such an earth human being will become an unconscious deceiver of himself and of all those who believe in his explanations. And in that aspect, she was talking about George Adamski. Now, whatever you think about the Adamski contacts, which is up to you, the Meyer information says this. that George Adamski was lying about his experiences. Askew is describing George Adamski, and she said that he carried out various deceitful manipulations quite consciously. There was another guy by the name of Reinhold Schmidt who was not having contacts either, but he was being deceived by the Giza intelligences, which is a different thing. Now, I talked a little bit about religious delusions and gave the example of the people that have the stigmatas that appear. And such individuals produce these wounds unconsciously through their own mental powers when their brains are exposed to the large subconscious composite of particular human masses. So our subconscious minds are connected in ways that we just don't understand yet. There was a lady named Teresa Neumann in a village in Bavaria, Germany, who could actually cause blood to flow from her eyes. And she would sit in bed in a trance. And it was an incredible power of her own unconscious mind. Therefore, we must think about our feelings, and they must never be forced or fought or eliminated. And the differences between feelings and emotions is easy to recognize for every human being if he directs his attention towards them. Emotions come suddenly like lightning, surging, uncontrolled, exciting, uncontrollable, and they're often very short duration. However, feelings manifest slowly and then are associated with a preceding thought process, quite in contrast to emotions, which are not preceded by thought processes. Emotions are not necessarily preceded by thoughts. Exclusively, conscious or unconscious thinking is responsible for the creation of feeling. Now, one big issue is automatic thoughts. And one of the biggest problems that we face are problem-causing thoughts that function somewhat automatically. We tend to narrow our frame of reference and focus on these thoughts over and over and over again. I'm sure you have your own issue that you think about a lot. So we need to learn to break that cycle of automatic thought and recognize when we fall prey to these thoughts, which generate feelings. And the feelings which are generated from automatic thoughts can harm our minds. And Billy puts it in this way on page 120. He says that problem-causing thoughts and evaluations and feelings which arise from them, which are unconsciously tended and nurtured, and which operate automatically, will throw the psyche into turmoil. It is these automatic thoughts which are the crucial point, because it is through them that the feelings are disturbed, and thereby also the psyche. So one thing that we can do is check when your feelings are getting disturbed, because these disturbing feelings are a sign that you have entered into a kind of thinking that is not good for your psyche. Each time these repeating thoughts move through the mind, they generate more disturbing feelings. So we want to break this pattern of uncontrolled automatic thoughts. This can be done through meditation, focusing on something else, listening to music, going out into nature. Let me tell you about the incredible skill of meditation. And it manifests in different ways, and there are all different kinds of meditation. But there is nothing better in this world. There's even a kind of meditation sleep, which is kind of what I fall into, which is so helpful. And oftentimes you can focus on an image like a blue sky. And then this is fun. You're focusing on a blue sky. Now imagine a horizon and a sea. And imagine waves on that sea, rolling waves on that sea. And now imagine out of the periphery of your eyes on either side you can see rolling green hills. Now think about those rolling green hills shortly, and kind of focus on them. And then you see some trees on those hills. See, you're visualizing now. You're steering your thoughts now. You're controlling your thoughts. And you're not, you're really using verbal thought. You're using imagery. Now focus on this vision of nature that you have. Now think about on this rolling sea and these hills and this blue sky. Now you have a yellow sun that's formed. And now watch that sun move down in the sky and watch it go from a yellow sun to an orange sun to a red sun. And notice the light in the sky now, the red and yellow light that's bouncing off the clouds. And now you have a sunset. And just stop right there, because you can see the rolling waves off in the horizon, reflected in the yellow and reddish lights on the rolling waves. So now just stay there. Now what you've done, just stay there and listen to the sounds. Can you imagine the sounds of the rolling waves? Now what you've just done is you steered your thoughts. You've taken control of your thoughts. Now if you can relax now, you can relax. You can go into a sleep state just before you fall asleep, and you're still conscious. And you've eliminated all those problem-causing thoughts, which operate automatically, because you've learned to take control of your own thinking. Problem-causing thoughts tend to become a bad habit, and we tend to repeat them over and over again. These thoughts create a distortion of reality, and they can lead to depression. We can start thinking about these problems unconsciously. We all have problems in our life that can generate this kind of automatic unconscious thinking. We need to examine which conscious or unconscious attitudes are causing our behavior. This is challenging because the unconscious or conscious ideas are not always immediately recognized. Sometimes it can be helpful to even create a diary of thoughts and feelings, something I haven't done yet, but it might be a good thing to do. Some of these unconscious thoughts can actually move to the conscious mind. So the point is, take the time to develop a systematic self-observation. Many of these problematic thoughts and feelings are of an unconscious nature. The circumstances from which suffering grows in the human being are the product of the might of his or her own thoughts, and they are caused by his mental disharmony. Let me focus a little bit on mental disharmony, because mental disharmony is what causes the suffering. You notice when we were just having our discussion about meditation, did you notice there was no mental disharmony in that meditative vision that you created through your own thoughts? There's no mental disharmony. Now, if you have mental disharmony, it will cause your own suffering to grow. Disharmony is a lack of agreement that often causes unhappiness or trouble. Disharmony can also be defined as the situation in which there is a disagreement and unpleasant feeling between people. And we can have these unpleasant feelings in our own psyche. It's our mental disharmony that causes our suffering to grow. And it's very interesting, in Contact 230, Quetzal talks about how mental disharmony will take shape in our music, and I think it already has. Quetzal explained that the effects of disharmonic music on human beings. It's an interesting thought. Billy asked Quetzal in Contact 230, "Tell me, what do you make of the bad music, which is manifestly gaining a firm footing on Earth?" Quetzal says this: "This is extremely regrettable, because, as I know from a look into the future, now the time is coming in which many kinds of evil become evident. Worldwide, more and more parents are becoming depraved, who sexually abuse their children, drive them into prostitution, rent them out for this purpose, and sell them for child pornography, and so forth, whereby the terrible torment will be inflicted on them, and some even become murdered. In addition to that, in the coming time, more and more children will commit suicide, whereby the suicide rate will climb inexorably. Harmonic music will extensively be displaced. So, let me say this. If you're having mental disharmony, try to find some harmonic music. Music can literally, if it's harmonic, and you'll have to decide what's harmonic to you, can restore. It has a restorative power. So go out and find harmonic music and listen. And it will help you with forming that imagery in your mind. But in the future, Quetzal says, unbelievably disharmonic music will be labeled as a modern music trend. And that disharmony will come about in youngsters, teenagers, and adults. In the future, monstrously big, disharmonious noise installations of this kind will take place everywhere, whereby all decency and all feelings of self-worth will be trampled underfoot many times over. So, you know, we live in what's called the third millennium. And it's a time when maliciousness and confusion will spread over the earth. But you don't have to participate in the maliciousness and the confusion that is spreading over the earth. You can maintain harmony in your own mind, in your own psyche. Harmony is a relationship characterized by a lack of conflict, a relationship where there is agreement, where there is interest, a relationship in which various components exist together without destroying one another, an orderly or pleasing combination of elements. Harmony of thoughts and feelings lead to joy and enjoyment. Harmony is the combination of simultaneously sounded musical notes, which produce chords and chord progressions that have a pleasing effect. So you should try to maintain a mental harmony, which includes peace and habits, happiness. And we need to stop rebelling against the circumstances in our life. Difficult circumstances can help us to discover hidden powers within ourselves. Lower thoughts form lower feelings, lower habits, and lower circumstances, such as alcoholism, hate, affliction, resentment, sorrow, grief, bitterness, errors of judgment, and so forth. Many kinds of suffering. If one's own thoughts are destructive, they crystallize into confusing and exhausting habits and circumstances, which then the human being is afflicted by. Now, habits, a habit is a settled or regular tendency or practice, one that's hard to give up. So make good habits. Make habits of thinking good thoughts. Develop the habit and the mental discipline to create that vision in your mind that we talked about, that beautiful landscape in your mind. Maintain healthy thoughts and you'll have a mental harmony, and it really pays off. Let me tell you, folks, you've been listening to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder. We'll be back next week. Have a great week. Thank you.